Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
Our Matrix server is about as free as internet chat can be. Join the existing rooms or create your own at chat.freetalklive.com.
Welcome to Declare Your Independence on the Free Talk Live Network.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
Fear here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock from Phoenix, Arizona. Eh? Now, we have an interesting show for you this afternoon. I want to make sure we find out what's up here. This is what's going on. All of the consternation around the world has been for one reason. It's always what it's always been about. Kingdom versus empire for resources of something. Well, this is going to be about pipelines, about energy, about the all business. Now, if you go and you watch the documentaries by James Corbett, How Big Oil Conquered the World, Why Big Oil Conquered the World, and Who's the People Behind It kind of thing. So this is what's going on. Now, Charlotte Dennett is our guest. Now, her father used to be with, before the CIA, there was another organization, which was, before the CIA people. Now, what happened was, he was involved in, it's called the, Daniel Dennett was her father, was the head of counterintelligence for the Central Intelligence Group, which was the forerunner of the CIA. When he traveled to Saudi Arabia in 1947 to determine the route of the Trans-Arabian Pipeline and whether it would terminate in Lebanon or Haifa, Palestine, you know, whatever, his plane crashed 2 weeks after he filed his last report. Well, his daughter is interested in, you know, things involving her father, and now she's got her own accolades. Now, she is the daughter of the first master spy in the Middle East. Now, that was her father. Now, what she has done, she offers a different perspective on the wars raging in Israel, Gaza, and Ukraine, based on decades of research and the mysterious death of her father and his top secret mission to Saudi Arabia. Maybe we'll hear a little bit about that. Now, she produced the book, Follow the Pipelines, Uncovering the Mystery of a Lost Spy and the Deadly Politics of the Great Game for Oil. Now, what I found very interesting is a couple of things have come up of late. I found out that there is a canal that they're trying to, I don't know if Israel needs any permission or anything, but certainly financing, and here it comes, that's going to bypass the Suez Canal. It's going to go all the way up from the Red Sea up where finger of land that goes up to the east, northeast of the Red Sea. But at the end of that, you can make a canal that goes across Israel that empties into the Mediterranean. Well, what happens when you do that? They'll take gazillions of dollars away from the Egyptian. That's one thing. But Israel wants to be the center of the universe, which they certainly got a lot of attention right now. But also they found oil. This was a while ago. This is back when Yasser Arafat was, you know, doing his thing with the PLO, Palestine Liberation Organization, that they found oil off the coast of Gaza. I think they found oil in Gaza. So now the Israelis are like, you know, we definitely do not want the Palestine Liberation Organization getting the revenue from that oil. We vote not that. Now, but we don't want it. Maybe we'll take it. Maybe it'll be ours. But we definitely don't want them to have it. Well, of course, the Palestinians were arguing that this is going to give them resources to improve the lives of their people, and it'll be a river of money going to the people kind of thing. Kind of you look at Kuwait. Like Kuwait, the people sharing the revenue from their oil, so everybody's rich, got it made. Well, even in Alaska, here in America, Alaska, there's a dividend that goes to the citizens. You know, you get a little bit of money. Now, the thing that we're looking at here is we're going, okay, would it go to the people of Palestine? I have no idea. But the Israeli argument is, probably wouldn't it make bombs to come after us, so we don't want them to have it, and oh, by the way, we'll take it. So there's an incentive there to understand these pipelines. Now, I just happened to be, I mean, just at a circuit, last night, I was just watching the 007 movie with Pierce Brosnan and Denise Richards, and it was all about pipelines that were competing with Russia's pipelines going through Azerbaijan or something, and they have a movie. But I was thinking, I'm going, wow, I'm going to be talking to Charlotte today, and this is exactly what they're talking about. 007 is always doing something. Mission Impossible, always about the future threat of some nuclear thing, and now the part one and two, the next Mission Impossible movie, is about artificial intelligence and how we're screwed. So this is very timely right now for Charlotte to explain to us what's going on. Now, she's an attorney, best-selling author, investigative journalist, is described by Time Magazine as an expert in resource-based politics, was recently included in Marquis 2324 Who's Who in America, so she got that going for her. Then it brings a unique understanding to the world's hotspots, asking that world leaders and journalists both look beyond the ethnic hatreds and divisions, and most notably Arabs versus Jews thing, to those who have set peoples against each other in their divide and rule quest to control and profit from the most coveted resources in history, the oil that fuels the world's militaries and the natural gas that does modern industries and energy. Now, this is her latest book has a lot of pipeline maps that are covering from World War II to the present, showing how the distribution of fuel via pipelines has resulted in military protection of the pipelines and often leading to war. Now, is there anything, Charlotte, you want to add to that introduction? Because that kind of gets us what we're going to be talking about. Frame for the audience what you think is of the most importance why people should buy your book, which is in the archive, by the way, Follow the Pipeline, Charlotte Dennett. Now, go to the archive for today, which is November 9th, 2023, and declare your independence with ErnestHancock.com. You go there, or top right, or FreemanPhoenix.com. You go in, you'll have access to be able to get this book. Now, Charlotte, go ahead and tell us all about what you think we need to know.
Well, that was a wonderful introduction, Ernest. I appreciate it. You covered the gamut there. But right now, I feel it's extremely important for people to understand what may be triggering this massive assault on Gaza by Netanyahu. It's not covered in the press. It hardly ever is. And there's a reason for that. The reason is that oil is the fuel of the military. So they don't like to talk about it because they've been told it's a national security issue. So that's why you watch most of your mainstream media shows. They're never going to mention the energy component. And yet all the great powers in the world are, know that if they want to remain great powers, they have to get access to oil. They have to control it. And then they have to control its distribution. And the most efficient way of distributing oil and now natural gas is by pipelines. But you're not going to get any bank to finance a pipeline infrastructure project unless it can be secured militarily. So there you go. That's the whole issue at hand. And it's impacted all your major endless wars that have happened since 9/11. In my book, I show the oil and pipeline connection to the war in Iraq, to the war in Afghanistan, to the civil war in Syria, to the war in Yemen. And now, here we are, war in Israel, Palestine. And, I find it absolutely shocking, what the, not only the Biden administration, but it would seem to be, both the Republican and Democratic parties have come in big behind, this invasion, which, is positively genocidal. I mean, granted, the horrific assault on Israel that happened a month ago, has to be condemned. But it also has to be seen in a larger context, which is a whole century of pent-up humiliation and annihilation of Palestinians. And so that might partly explain the ferocity of that attack. However, you cannot attribute that alone to genocide. Genocide has to be a deliberate effort to wipe out a people, to deny them food and fuel and medical assistance, and then to drive them off the land. That is what's happening right now. And, Netanyahu was not a real popular guy shortly before this began. As you may know, there were a lot of demonstrations against him because of how he was changing the Israeli judiciary.
Yeah.
Well, part of that was so he could annex the West Bank. That was on his agenda. But at any rate, so this attack happened, and he had, I think, the pretext he was looking for to do the massive invasion of Gaza, which he and some of the Israeli generals have wanted since 2007. That was when a military commander named Yalon had said that that the whole idea of Palestinians getting access to the natural gas off of their coastline, it's called the Gaza Marine. It was discovered in 2000. And by 2007, the Israelis were saying, look, this isn't going to trickle down. This isn't going to help the Palestinians because all the money's going to go into feeding their terrorist outfit. That sort of goes against what Arafat said when it was first discovered in 2000. He said it was going to help at last we can have independence. That's what he was saying, because it's been occupied. Gaza and the West Bank, they've been occupied by Israel for decades. So then in late 2008, Israel launched its first major war on Gaza. It was called Operation Cast Lead. And the whole idea was to, as they said, send Gaza decades into the past, destroy it. And they wanted to go after Hamas. And then in 2014, there was another one. There was another major armed assault on the Palestinian people, and the same purpose, to uproot Hamas and to prevent the Gazans from getting access to their oil and natural gas. So you won't hear this. You won't hear this in the media, but That is what I believe it's all about. And there's more to it than
okay,
that.
Okay, there's one other thing that I wanted to bring up. Any research that you find, it's like the ISIS was created by the CIA. Hamas was created by Israel, the Mossad. They made Hamas. It's kind of like stipulated now. It was kind of in opposition to PLO to be on it got out of hand. They got supported by Iran, whatever. It's just them playing games. It's always it. And my thing is, I tell you, you know, Charlotte, I want to share this one little story with you. This weekend, I was at an event, and there's like a social thing component to it. And somebody came up to me, and I just to start a conversation, yeah, what are we going to do about this, you know, Hamas-Israel thing? What do you think? What do you think about what you think? And I do this often on the show, and it's not to be demeaning. It's just to make a point. And I go, I have one question first. Am I allowed to not care? Okay? I just want to know, right up front, am I allowed to not care? Oh, no, you got to care. And of course, they want you to care a certain way, you know. But I'm going, all this stuff that's happening around the world, I'm like, we got enough to worry about here. You know, what happens is, the last administration, we become energy independent. We were exporting. Now we're not. What the heck is going on? Now we got to worry about Mideast oil again. Now we got to worry about Mideast problem. We got to worry about Israel. We got to. So what I'm really hoping to get from this is not that the atrocities that both sides are doing or whatever, I can go on both ways, don't care. My interest is the research that you've done on the pipelines. You know, that is a determining influential factor in what happens with militaries around the world. You know, it's this flow of energy. It's, you know, Putin's Russia, you know, China deals, Iran. Where does India get its fuel? We have Ukraine, the Donbass. We have, you know, the oil in Gaza. I mean, it seems to me you scratch the surface. It comes down to your book of pipelines, okay? So go ahead and, you know, kind of let's talk about what competing pipelines are we talking about in the Middle East and the Mediterranean area. Give us an overview on that before we, you know, start focusing on Gaza. Go ahead and help us understand what's at stake with energy.
Well, Fritz, I'll give you an example. You may remember that there was a civil war in Syria that it began around 2011, and it only ended fairly recently. And the reason that the Assad regime didn't fall is because the Russians came in behind it. And I have a map in my book, A Tale of Competing Pipelines, for instance. And in that case, there had been a plan that the West supported that was going to carry natural gas from Qatar, which is like this a little offshoot off the Saudi Peninsula that has it's rich in natural gas, and they were going to run the pipeline across the Saudi Peninsula and through Syria on up to Europe. The whole idea being to bypass the extensive network of pipelines that exists in, for instance, Ukraine and that were built by the Russians. The Europeans have been dependent on Russian natural gas for 40% of their energy needs. And we can get into Nord Stream 2 pipeline, the one that gets sabotaged.
Absolutely.
And remind me to come back to that. But with regard to the Syrian civil war, so the West had floated this idea, and the ruler of Syria said no. And the reason he said no is because the Russians, who are his benefactors, didn't want it. What they wanted was a pipeline that ran from Iran and crossed Syria and then went up to Europe through Turkey. The West didn't want that pipeline. And so what happened is that you start to see what could have been a legitimate insurrection by Syrian people against Assad because, you know, he was pretty much an autocrat, right? And they were protesting. They wanted more democracy. But after those initial protests, suddenly all these proxy fighters start pouring into the Syria, and some of them, ISIS went in there, and I think from Qatar there were some forces that went in there. Anyway, the West had their little proxy groups trying to undermine Assad, and then Assad called in the help of Russia, and Russia called on the Iranians, and so you had these proxy wars. Well, ultimately, Russia won out, okay? It didn't achieve what the West had wanted. What the West had really wanted was an energy corridor that runs up, if you look at that map right even there that you were just showing, it runs up along the eastern Mediterranean. If you want to put the map of the cover of my book on again, people would be able to see that it's the whole eastern Mediterranean that the idea is to take the Israelis have a huge amount of natural gas off the eastern Mediterranean too. And their dream has been to become a major energy corridor that will supply Europe with lots of natural gas, because Europe now is desperate. The Nord Stream 2 pipeline had been, well, first it had been canceled by the Germans under U.S. pressure, and then it was sabotaged, as you know. But there you see, right up along that whole eastern Mediterranean, is the idea of doing an energy corridor. And I can't help but think that that's the long-range plan of the Western nation in conjunction with Israel. So if they're going to run that, they got to get rid of the radicals, you know. They got to get rid of Hamas. So they're going to destroy Hamas, which was indeed supported by Netanyahu back in 2006. That's or 2005, I believe. And the idea was to separate it from the West Bank. It was divide and rule. Anyway, that may be a little confusing to people, but
no,
there wasn't
that's very
Israeli,
clear. Yeah, there's energy there. They want to get the energy.
Yeah.
You have different interests that are doing it. You know, who's your buddy, who's not? You know, who's making what? You know, because you think about it, during the Trump administration, he was going to Europe going, you want us to fund NATO and defend you against Russia fighting them, while you're giving them a bunch of money buying their energy. What are you, stupid? You know, there's not. He didn't want to bomb them. He didn't want to. He's just taking commercial interest. Well, we're going to open up energy. Now we're the United States is a surplus exporter, supplier of the plant. You know, we're making money. It's all good. But there's something else going on. So then they threaten them with NATO, keep expanding, knowing that it's going to provoke Putin. They keep trying to provoke him now, and they want a third world war.
What the hell we fighting for?
Are you a business owner? Are you confused by the complexity of the tax laws? We can help. I'm Dan Pilla, and I've been helping business owners solve tax problems for over 40 years. My book, The Small Business Tax Guide, shows proven ways to avoid all the common business tax problems. Don't risk your business. Go to danpilla.com to order your copy. That's danpilla.com. Order now and get a free 15-minute call directly with me, a $99 value. Go to danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions. SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
U.S. USA News Update. House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries is indicating that Democrats may be open to backing the Republicans' temporary funding bill as a measure to avert a government shutdown scheduled for this Friday. In a letter sent today to all House Democrats, Jeffries conveyed that they are actively reviewing the proposal put forth by Republican leadership and engaging in discussions with fellow members. Donald Trump Jr. has testified once again in the civil fraud trial involving the Trump Organization. Speaking on behalf of the defense, he attributed the charges against his father to an overzealous attorney general in New York.
It doesn't feel like, you know, we're playing by the rules. We're playing by a one-sided system of justice.
The Trump family is accused of exaggerating their wealth to secure more favorable loan agreements. And the U.S. Supreme Court is implementing a formal code of ethics in an endeavor to enhance public confidence in the judiciary. John Schaefer, USA News.
Hi, I'm Dr. Joel Wallach, the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy. There's no reason why you shouldn't live to be at least 100 and have a great time getting there. And I'm going to give you a free copy of my lecture that tells you exactly how to do it. In fact, after you've lived a long and healthy life, there should be only two documents in your medical chart, a birth certificate and a death certificate. I'm Dr. Wallach with a warning. If you have a 4-inch medical chart, if you take prescription drugs for high cholesterol, high blood pressure, arthritis, joint pains, and other health issues, the medical profession is failing you. They're using you for an ATM machine. My free lecture is going to reveal what pharmaceutical companies don't want you to know. There's been groundbreaking research and discoveries on how to effectively treat or eliminate over 900 different diseases naturally. It's all in my free lecture called Deadly Recipe. So call toll-free 1-855-79-YOUNG. Again, that's toll-free 1-855-79-YOUNG. 1-855-79-YOUNG.
I am a non-attorney spokesperson representing a team of lawyers who help people that have been injured or wronged. If you've been involved in a serious car, truck, or motorcycle accident or injured at work, you have rights and you may be entitled to money for your suffering. Don't accept an offer you get from an insurance company until you talk to a lawyer. And we represent some of the best personal injury lawyers you can find. Tough lawyers that will fight to win your case. And they're so good they stake their reputation on it by only getting paid if you win. So if you've been in a serious car, truck, or motorcycle accident or hurt on the job, find out today for free what kind of compensation you may be entitled to. Call the legal helpline right now.
800-524-3810. 800-524-3810. 800-524-3810. That's 800-524-3810.
We still do email. Drop your email address in the entry box at freetalklive.com, and you'll be kept in the loop with Free Talk Live.
What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
This hour, Declare Your Independence on the Free Talk Live Network is brought to you by Dash Digital Cash. Dash is a cryptocurrency designed to be used for spending. Let's talk about your positive experiences using Dash. Dash has transaction fees that are less than 1 cent. Dash transactions are instant, irreversible, and are protected from 51% attacks by its chain locks technology. Dash is the world's first decentralized autonomous organization. BitRefill allows for discounted purchases at national retailers. We want to thank Dash DAO for sending us 32 Dash per month to promote Dash on the air. Visit Dash.org to learn about Dash. Dash.org is one of the oldest cryptocurrencies and is widely available on exchanges and in multi-crypto wallets. It's easy to get and use Dash. Start by learning more at Dash.org. Welcome back to Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, on the Free Talk Live Network on Genesis. We're talking with Charlotte Dennett. Charlotte Dennett is an attorney, best-selling author, investigative journalist. Her recent book, Follow the Pipelines, Uncovering the Mystery of a Lost Spy and the Deadly Politics of the Great Game for Oil. This is about all the wars, you know, recent past, it's been about energy. You've scratched the surface, and it's always about who's got some oil somewhere. So we're going to go ahead and continue this conversation. Stick to the end. You'll learn a lot that you're not getting anywhere else.
anyway, that may be a little confusing to people, but
no,
there wasn't
that's very
Israeli,
clear. Yeah, there's energy there. They want to get the energy.
Yeah.
You have different interests that are doing it. You know, who's your buddy, who's not? You know, who's making what? You know, because you think about it, during the Trump administration, he was going to Europe going, you want us to fund NATO and defend you against Russia, fighting them, while you're giving them a bunch of money buying their energy. What are you, stupid? You know, there's not. He didn't want to bomb them. He didn't want to. He's just taking commercial interest. Well, we're going to open up energy. Now we're the United States is a surplus exporter, supplier of the planet. You know, we're making money. It's all good. But there's something else going on. So then we get, they threaten them with NATO, keep expanding, knowing that it's going to provoke Putin. They keep trying to provoke him now, and they want a third world war for some reason or something. And then you have, of course, Putin's going to come in, take Crimea. He's got all his military warm water port there and everything. Takes Crimea. Then he gets the Donbass, which, of course, he's saying these are the Russian-speaking citizens there that align with us. We will protect them. You're persecuting them. They're kind of like Catholic Irish or something the British are doing kind of deal. So we're going to go save them. But just so happens to have a bunch of oil there, you know, so that's good. Then in the beginning of this, here comes Nord Stream. Nord Stream is have a bunch of oil, gas, or whatever is going to Germany, because Germany is like 40, like you say, 40% of their energy is coming from Russia. They're getting a good deal, not a discount, you know. So then they go, we got to stop that. Boom, blew it up. Oh, Putin did it. He blew up his own pipeline. You know, like we're total freaking morons, you know. So this is, you know, I can see all of this going, but who, what are we up against? Who's on the other side? Is it just Exxon? Is it British Petroleum? Is it a state-sponsored group of countries and a corporation? What the heck is driving this? I can understand the financial interest and energy, but I still haven't got a clear cabal. I mean, who is it? Who's Dr. Evil? Who's the guy sitting at Spectre, well, head of the table?
If we're going to talk about Ukraine for a minute, the people that are benefiting from the war in Ukraine are, in fact, the natural gas producers in the Southwest, because they are now shipping lots of LNG to Europe. So they're benefiting very nicely. And I think that they have wanted this for a long time. You see, the way I see it is, you got the majors. You got Exxon, Chevron, BP, Total. These are the major, huge oil companies. And usually when a country is exploring for oil, there are sometimes the minor leagues that get in there that find it. And so the majors sit back and let them do all their initial investments. And then when it looks like the oil or the natural gas is ready for market, the big guys come in and buy them out. One of the things that happened, like, for instance, now I'm skipping to Iraq. Prior to the war in Iraq, the Bush family, of course, had holdings in oil, and they and a lot of the southern and western oil companies that were miners, they were independents. They wanted to get in. They wanted to get in on it, and they were frustrated because the big guys were always getting the major contracts. So there was a oil incentive for George W. Bush to invade Iraq. And he immediately came up and, you know, blamed Saddam Hussein was a terrorist and so on and had weapons of mass destruction, which was a lie. And that was the reason for going into Iraq. What's often not told is that Netanyahu, who was a finance minister at the time, this is 2003, he wanted to reopen a pipeline that ran from Iraq to Haifa. And when you have a chance to put my book on the screen again, you will actually see the pipeline that he wanted to reopen. It was called the Iraq Petroleum Pipeline, and it had been closed during the 1940s. There you go. And if you see that, you see the fork up there, I see you got your arrow. If you go to the forked pipeline right below the square where my title is, right there, just go up a little, right there, that's the Iraq Petroleum Pipeline, the southern one. That was British controlled, okay? And
you're talking about this one that goes right here?
That's it. Okay. That had oil flowing from Iraq to Haifa. Now, when I was looking at that, I was thinking, when was that built? It was built in the 30s, but when was it conceived? And I realized it was conceived during World War One. Why? Because right before World War One, Churchill, who was at the time the first Lord of the Admiralty, that means that he was in control of the British Navy, he converted Navy its fuel supply from coal, which Britain had a lot of, to oil, which Britain had none of. That meant, and he even said this, I think it was in 1911, he said, we are going to have to fight on a sea of troubles to get our own oil supply. He preferred oil because it was cheaper and more efficient. He realized he had to go in that direction. And so what happened is getting the oil of Iraq became, quote-unquote, a first-class war aim on the part of the British. And, in fact, they were able to get control of the oil of Iraq. And they also had their first oil was in Iran that they got. But they also got the oil of Iraq during World War One, and then they built that pipeline. So that was very crucial to supplying oil during World War II. And then you see that other branch up there north of the Iraq one. That was French-controlled. So what happened is the big powers after World War One divvied up the whole Middle East, and the southern part was British-controlled and even ran, some of the borders ran right along the pipeline route, and the northern was French-controlled. So it was called the British Mandate and the French Mandate. What they did is they set up colonies along the eastern Mediterranean. So the British were going to control Palestine, and the French were going to control Lebanon and Syria. And so it's right at this very time in 1917 that you have the very famous Balfour Declaration, which has for, you know, decades been described as Britain's official approval of having a Jewish state in Palestine, okay? And supposedly it was because they were concerned about the pogroms that had gone on against the Jews.
Wait. When you say pogrom, I hear that a lot. What does that mean?
Yeah. Well, Jews were attacked throughout Europe. I mean, there was, you know, there was horrific anti-Semitism that was going on in Europe at the time.
And that's called a pogrom? I mean, is that a Hebrew word? Because I hear it. I'm just wondering what they mean. It's a persecution and attack on Jews.
That's what they meant.
Okay.
You know, massive attacks on Jews. Right? So Jews felt in danger. And then there was the Herzl, the founder of the Zionist movement, was trying to figure out, you know, how he could find a safe refuge for the Jews. And he ultimately went along with the British scheme that was going to form a Jewish home in Palestine. Of course, there was historical precedents, you know, the Jews had lived there for centuries. Well, so had the Arabs, for that matter. And really what it is, or what it became, was what's called a colonial settler state. In other words, you're going to take European Jews and put them in a ethnic Arab, mostly Arab, primarily Arab occupied land, and you're going to cut deals with the British. And that's what happened. Now, this seldom gets into the official books, the whole oil connection to the Balfour Declaration has only recently come out, and I quote it in my book, and I rely on Israeli scholars who are finally getting in and getting some declassified documents. The problem is, when the Holocaust happened, of course, there was even greater reason for Jews wanting refuge in Palestine. There's even a sad story about that, because when the worst of the Holocaust was going on, there were cries for the U.S. military to bomb the ovens in Auschwitz, to bomb them. And we were able to even talk to people who had been in Auschwitz, and they told us that when they saw the planes going ahead, they pleaded, bomb us, bomb us. They wanted the killing machine stopped. If the killing machine had been stopped, then European survivors would be able to emigrate down into Palestine. There was only one problem. FDR sent out some feelers to, you know, how the Arabs were going to react to that, and particularly to Saudi Arabia. And King Ibn Saud, the founder of Saudi Arabia, did not want that to happen. He did not want Jews settling in Palestine. And he threatened FDR, and he said, your exclusive oil concession in Saudi Arabia is going to be endangered if you allow that to go through. So here's the great irony, and it's a tragic irony. Some of the Jews were able to escape, even though the decision was made not to bomb Auschwitz, purportedly because the planes had to go and bomb IG Farben plant, the Nazi IG Farben plant, which was actually just very close to where Auschwitz was. It was a fake reason. That's long been established. But at any rate, so some of the first Jewish settlers in Palestine during this horrible time in World War II, you know what they protested? And you know what their signs said? Are you ready for this?
Ready.
No blood for oil. They were the first people to have this slogan, no blood for oil. But then what happened is that, because they realized their lives were being sacrificed for Saudi oil. Now we're coming full circle to right now. And
okay,
the Israelis are trying to cut a deal.
Okay, let's stay back there a little bit. You know, there's no blood for oil thing. As they had, you know, I'm wondering how much was the idea that we have trading off the Jewish interest and the founding of Israel for oil with other Middle Eastern countries and so on, when they, you know, like Exodus, and they wouldn't let them land the ship, or they're trying to get, was this, you know, just political of, you know, Arabs hate Jews or something, or was behind it a lot of these oil concerns?
There was an alliance that developed between the United States government and the Zionist movement. They had mutual interests. The U.S. government and the oil companies wanted a European outpost which would protect their oil.
Got it.
And key among them at this time was Ibn Saud. It was the richest oil find ever. This brings in my father. So we're going back and forth. But my father, his last mission to Saudi Arabia was to determine the route of the Trans-Arabian pipeline. And I was able to get declassified documents. I sued the CIA under the Freedom of Information Act. So I got some of his early reports. I was also able to get his last letter home to my mother and his last report. His last report was written in March 1947, and it detailed how the Aramco, which is the American-based oil company and affiliated with Standard Oil of California, which is now Chevron, they were pissed off with the Syrians, which at this time were very highly nationalistic, and they were anti-Zionist, okay? And they were pissed off, the oil people, that Syria did not want the pipeline, Trans-Arabian pipeline, to go through Syria, because they were opposed to the State of Israel, which was about to be created. Actually, it was created 1 year later, but they already the land was already being partitioned, and the Syrians saw the writing on the wall. They said, "We don't want it." And my father's last report goes into detail about that. He favored the pipeline terminating in Lebanon, not in Haifa. And the reason was there was a lot of unrest going on. The Jews were fighting the British. They wanted their independence from the British. And they were also fighting the Arabs, who didn't want more settlements to be established in Palestine. So there was a huge amount of conflict. And if you're going to run a pipeline, you don't want it to go where there's conflict. So my father recommended that the pipeline terminate in southern Lebanon, which it ultimately did. But because of the Syrians, as he was describing in his last report, didn't want it. After my father's death, the CIA pulled off a coup against the president of Syria and overthrew the president and put in a police chief who favored the pipeline going through Syria.
Of course.
And this was the first CIA coup. Everybody thinks it was in Iran. No, it was in Syria in 1949. That's what I discovered. But at any rate, it was going through my father's papers that I found a really interesting document written in 1944. Just when he was about to head off to Lebanon as the head of counterintelligence. And it was called analysis of work. And he was sort of parroting back what he was expected to do over there. And what he said, and this is interesting, you know, you saw that picture of me with all the redactions. That's part of that whole blacked out section. That's part of his report. And there was a line that had not been blacked out. It's where he said, "The oil is so important, we must control it at all costs. The oil of Saudi Arabia must be controlled at all costs."
And this is your father saying.
And that's what my father wrote. And what I learned is that has been like a meme, like a theme, that's there. Yeah, that's the report. See all of that? So this one sentence says the oil must be controlled at all costs, which verified what I was already thinking.
Wait. Of all that redaction, that's the only thing that they didn't redact?
No, the first page is not quite. That's like five. That's page 4 and 5.
Okay.
Page 1, 2, and 3 are not quite as heavily redacted. But
still, I mean, they left that part. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, interestingly enough, after all my work to figure out what happened to my father, eventually they came around, the CIA came around and actually honored him. I get this call from the CIA out of the blue, and they say, "Hey, you know, we have these annual ceremonies at the wall. There's a wall right at Langley headquarters, and all these stars on the wall. Those are all the men and women who have fallen in the line of duty." And the CIA acknowledged that my father was probably the first star, because he died a few months before the CIA was even created. But he had similar training and was on sort of the similar type of mission. So they decided to honor him. They actually invited me and my family down for the ceremony in which he was honored on the wall. So that's a whole other story if you want to get into it.
Well, the timing of that is interesting. Did they do that after you're suing them or before?
What happened is in 2007, I had to appeal my Freedom of Information case. They weren't going to turn over any more documents. And so I went down to the Second Circuit, the courtroom of the Second Circuit, and I was in there arguing my case. I was saying, the American people need to know this early history, and this is very important for historical reasons, is what I was saying. Well, it turns out there was a New York Times reporter and a Village Voice reporter in the courtroom. And so when I walked out of the courtroom, they ran up to me and they wanted my story. So I gave interviews to both of them. Shortly after those interviews, one of the CIA historians said, you know, this guy Dan Dennett, he's very interesting. He was a Harvard scholar. He knew the region really well. In fact, his cover was cultural attaché. The reason was because he'd studied the Quran, he could speak Arabic, and he taught at the American University of Beirut when he was a younger man, fresh out of college, and he grew to love the region and he loved the people. And so, and he wrote very scholarly, very in-depth reports, and so they felt that he needed to be honored. And, you know, you don't have that so much anymore. First of all, whatever people think, you're always going to have your spy agencies. I mean, I've written very critically against the CIA. My husband and my first book together was about how Nelson Rockefeller had built an oil empire in Latin America. And it was our first book on genocide, too, because the indigenous people were in the way. And they found techniques for pacifying them, and they're using religious missionaries, for instance. And it was based on all I learned about how the boys on top manipulate people. And then I applied it to the Middle East. That book is called
Why Will Be Done. About that. When you have these guys that they got to go pacify a country, they got to go, you know, make sure that they're on our side, or at least not against us, okay? So when they go in, what's their time frame? Are they always next election, a year, two, or do they, from the beginning, start thinking generationally? What's their envelope of time that they're dealing with the CIA, you think?
If you're concerned about the power grid and want to generate your own supply of off-grid electricity, this will be the most important message you'll hear this year. Here's why. We now have a small number of solar generators back in stock. These emergency backup systems provide life-saving backup power when you need it most. And unlike gas generators, solar generators run quietly, emit no dangerous fumes, and produce an endless supply of free electricity from the sun. Whether it's wildfires, dangerous weather, power grid issues, or just getting off the grid, you'll never have to suffer through painful power outages again. Even better, all this week, radio listeners get over $700 in free off-the-grid bonuses, too. Go to MySolarBackup.com to learn more and check availability. That's MySolarBackup.com. Look for the free report, Crisis Cooling, how to make absolutely sure your meat, milk, and medicines stay safe and cool in any power outage. Yours free at MySolarBackup.com.
I spend a lot of time in the garage, but even more time in the rain, sleet, and mud. In 95, I helped tow your moving trailer. In 05, I helped you get out of a ditch. Yeah, I know I'm a bit rusty, and sadly in 09, it was sparks from me your handy chains, dragging behind your truck that accidentally started a wildfire.
Sparks from dragging chains can start a wildfire. Spark a change, not a wildfire. Visit SmokeyBear.com, brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
Only you can prevent wildfires.